The Celtics back on the winning track, but they lose Marcus Smart to an injury. You'll hear from Marcus Smart about that sprained ankle, and I realized something about the officiating. We're going to talk about it right now on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie's, let's go.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my baby, ma. Anything's possible.
Rain of days back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly.
It's a Tuesday, and I'm John Corrales of MassLive.com coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona, where the Boston Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns 99-85, courtesy of a 15-2 run to close the second quarter and cruise in the second half in a very important game for the Boston Celtics to win. They got Jason Tatum as the leader there, 26 points, 11 rebounds. An 11-rebound game also for Daniel Theis, who didn't score and didn't need to. Kemba Walker with 19 points in this one and 5 assists. Jaylen Brown, 14 points, 9 rebounds, 3 assists for him. 10 points off the bench for Brad Wanamaker. And that's basically the scoring effort from the Boston Celtics. 20 points for Devin Booker in this one on 7 of 13 shooting. But the Celtics did a good job to limit him. Especially in the first half, where he only had 8 points on 3 of 7 shooting. So let's start there, because the game was won by their defense. And really, it might have been 120 minutes before the game when all of a sudden it was announced that Ricky Rubio was going to not start, doubtful to play with back spasms. Without Ricky Rubio starting, the Suns started Javon Carter, and he was like just a non-factor in this game. And really, when you think about what the Suns have done so far this year, Rubio as their point guard has really helped, because it gets Devin Booker off the ball, takes pressure off of him as a primary ball handler. He can go out and be more of the scorer that he is. Not that he doesn't score with the ball in his hands, but you know what I mean. Like, Rubio settles that team down. He distributes. He's part of what makes that team go. Basically, Rubio and Baines together have been the right combination for the Phoenix Suns. And without Rubio as the guy to distribute the ball, the Celtics were able to really hone in on Devin Booker. And they did a great job in the first half. I mean, they double-teamed him. They really blitzed him to get the ball out of his hands. And they kind of dared other people to make plays. In the first half, Kelly Oubre kind of did a little bit, but they didn't get much else, Phoenix, from anybody. And when Frank Kaminsky was on the floor, the Celtics were in full-on attack mode and just going at him. They were calling plays like, as soon as they saw him, like, go at him. Just whether it's on the post, they put Cantor on the post a couple times to try to attack him. They try to attack him in a pick and roll. They just drove at him. It really was like, I almost started to feel bad for Frank Kaminsky, but the Celtics did a great job. Meanwhile, in the first half, the Celtics got a little bit of a different performance from Kemba Walker. Kemba scored 13 of his 19 points in the first half. No need for fourth quarter heroics from Kemba Walker there. That's an important thing, because really, if you want to know what the best statistic in this game was, not a single Celtic played 30 minutes in this game. They got to rest in the back end of the fourth quarter. They had a chance to kind of get extended minutes with some of these other players. Everybody but Enes Kanter played a real fair amount. Well, you can throw Carson Edwards in there because he only played 10 minutes. But everyone else, 15, 17, 20, 29 minutes for Brad Wanamaker. I mean, he played starter minutes. But everyone else, just under 30 minutes. And on a back-to-back, going into L.A., losing another hour, going back into a different time zone, and getting ready to play, maybe the Kawhi Leonard Clippers. He's been held out. He had a knee contusion. He's missed his last couple of games, and they list him as day-to-day, so he might play. He might just be resting up for the home game. But if he doesn't, that's going to be huge for the Boston Celtics, obviously, because the Clippers are a very different team without Kawhi Leonard. But regardless, the Celtics getting some, any little bit of rest that they can, going into L.A., a very, very, very difficult final two games on this road trip. They have a day off and then a Wednesday night game in L.A., a day off to travel to Denver, and then a Friday night game in Denver. And then they finally come home for a little bit. So getting those guys that rest was huge. And so Kemba, no need to get those fourth quarter heroics. That was good. Jason Tatum had a nice performance. Like I said, he was the team leader in points and rebounds. I would say that one of the most encouraging things about Tatum is that 5 of 7 from two. He missed an early layup, a reverse layup, and it was a finger roll. And whatever, it was a little on the difficult side. It wasn't too difficult, but we're sitting there in press row saying, oh boy, here we go. But then he really started to finish. That reverse layup that I was thinking of is the one he did finish later on. That was a nice play. I think there's some credence to what Brad Stevens had been saying about Jason Tatum in that you see a couple of these things fall, and next thing you know, finishing at the rim doesn't seem like such a problem. The storyline in January might be like, oh yeah, Jason Tatum, remember back then he was, for some reason at the beginning of the season, he wasn't making layups, and now he's shooting blah, blah, blah percent, and it's going to be a good number. So this was a good number for him, and you see what happens when he has that good number. You know, dropping 26 points, that's significant. Two things that really, really stood out in that final stretch in the second quarter. The Celtics did a fantastic job of limiting Phoenix to one shot while also going out and score and getting second chance points. At halftime, it was 10-0 Celtics in second chance points. And that was a significant part of why the Celtics were able to build that lead and have a second quarter where they won by 11. The Celtics had 6 offensive rebounds in that second quarter to the 8 total rebounds that Phoenix had. So the Celtics were really crashing the boards there, and Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, had all 6 of those offensive rebounds. Now, Jaylen didn't have like the biggest, sexiest night, 14 points, 9 rebounds. He had some key plays, but those offensive rebounds in the second quarter were very important, as were 2 block shots from Grant Williams when it was 42-40 and then later on 48-40, like about a minute later. Grant came over and first blocked Kelly Oubre, then later on blocked Frank Kaminsky, both on plays where Oubre and Kaminsky both thought that they had clear paths to the basket and in easy baskets, easy layups, and he came over and erased both, which was huge at that time. And to have Grant come in off of a DNP against Sacramento, that's just a level of focus that it's not easy to find in any player, and then much less a rookie. Coming off a DNP, it's very easy to come in and be, I don't know, upset, unfocused, nervous that, well, I just had a DNP. If I screw up, then maybe I'll get pulled again and I won't get back in. But Grant went out there and really played very well. The blocks were the highlights. The blocks were critical in that run. Like I said, from that point on, it was a 15-2 run to close the quarter. Those were 2 buckets that would have cut the lead to either 2 or 4. And I don't know, at some point the Celtics built a lead of up to 20 points, I believe was their biggest lead. 21 was actually the biggest lead. They could have maybe prevented a lead that size. Because you never know what the ripple effect of Oubre scoring that basket or Kaminsky scoring that basket. Especially if you look at the Kaminsky bucket that or block that Grant erased. You look at the bench and Jay Larinaga, I tweeted this out, Reds_Army_John, if you haven't followed me on Twitter. I tweeted this out where you see Jay Larinaga like basically throwing a towel before, as soon as Kaminsky cut, because the Celtics blew a coverage and Kaminsky, I think, slipped a screen or had a backdoor cut, and Grant just chambers up that jump and goes up and blocks it, and the bench erupts. That's a critical play right there that really helps keep the momentum going for Boston, because then they come on down and they just have that energy, that juice. So that's, I think, how this game was won, was in that stretch, because the third quarter was played even at 23-23. The Suns actually won the fourth quarter by one, but at that point, a lot of it was garbage time. It was that stretch in the end of the second quarter, and you never know when the killer stretch is going to come. So a great bounce-back win for the Boston Celtics, a really important win for the Celtics for them to get back on track. I mean, if you flip this and say, oh, well, they beat the Suns, I mean, they beat the Kings and lost to the Suns, I wouldn't have been surprised. So 2-1 on the road trip now, and we'll see what happens against the Clippers and Denver. I mean, frankly, I don't have the highest hopes, because those are two of the best teams in the league. The Celtics have the best record in the league, though, so I guess I still have preseason expectations in my head. And we'll see. We'll see how this progresses for the Boston Celtics. Going to take a break. Going to come back, talk a little bit about Enes Kanter, and then you'll hear Marcus Smart talking about his ankle injury, which was a really big moment in this game. Stick around. More Locked On Celtics next.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at mybookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. Listening on the go, if you can't visit MyBookie right now, you can find this and all other offers from our Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. Enes Kanter did not play in the second half of the Celtics' win in Phoenix, which is kind of interesting. He got 5.5 minutes in the first half and was okay. Got a few rebounds, scored a basket on a hook shot against Frank Kaminsky, committed a foul, had a steal, and a turnover. That turnover was a weird call, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in the next segment, where the official thought that she saw him catch the ball, and she thought that he passed it, and he'd actually tipped it, but whatever. Bottom line here is that I think we're starting to see a little bit of the Celtics big man rotation start to materialize, that Kanter might get bigger minutes against bigger players, but there's no bigger player than Aaron Baines. But I think the thing with Aaron Baines is the way they use him, it's not just about him backing down. So they use him as a floor spacer. And I'll tell you, I thought that Brad was really pissed at Enes Kanter for one play where Aaron Baines hit a three and Kanter hadn't stepped up high enough to prevent that three. And he really was upset, Brad was. And I don't know, and it didn't come up after the game because you only have a limited time to ask questions and other things took precedence, but the way that they were using Kanter, trying to match up against Kaminsky, I mean, he really wasn't able to defend those pick and rolls very well. That's his weakness. I think the Celtics are going to use Cantor against the Embiid types of the world, but it's becoming clear that if the Celtics are going to be a defensive team, a top-level defensive team, they're going to have to rely on Daniel Theis and Robert Williams. And Robert Williams didn't exactly have a gigantic game in this either, but he played 15 minutes and at least had 7 rebounds. But he had a terrible stretch in this game where he had a personal foul and an offensive foul on a screen on Oubre, and then he took a mid-range jumper, which I couldn't see Brad's face, but I could see his posture, and it kind of like slumped over. I don't think he likes any bit of Robert Williams taking a mid-range jumper. He also bit on an Aaron Baines pass that fake, and Baines drove baseline and passed it and led to a basket. And then there was a play where he and Carson Edwards kind of weren't on the same page, and Rob threw the ball out of bounds. And that was not the best stretch of his professional life. So, but at least he played in the second half and played a little bit better. But yeah, he had a first half stretch where it was not particularly great. So the Celtics bigs are going to rely on Theis. And if Rob Williams can get himself more consistent, then, you know, hopefully for the Celtics, that's going to be somebody that they can rely on. And they're going to have to go small with Grant sometimes, and sometimes they'll have to go big with Cantor. And the fact is that I don't think Cantor is going to get a significant role at this point unless he improves some of the things that Brad Stevens wants him to improve. But yeah, you can see that Brad was very, very upset about how Cantor defended that three. Everybody was very upset about how Marcus Smart turned his right ankle. And so Smart had just in the fourth quarter hit a three to make it a 20-point game, and he was going down the other end to guard Devin Booker. Booker cut baseline. Smart was trying to navigate around. There was some traffic in the middle of the lane, and as Marcus Smart, you'll hear him explain, he says he turf-toed it, which his toe kind of got caught on the floor for some reason, and he turned his ankle. It could be a freak thing. That happens sometimes. You know, I wonder, just because I was talking on yesterday's podcast about how his hip is bothering him, and was that a situation where he at that point was fatigued enough where he wasn't picking his foot up all the way off the floor, and that's why his toe kind of got caught? I don't know. That's just me speculating. I'll leave it at that. I won't get any deeper into that. It's a little bit irresponsible, but we'll leave it alone. Marcus Smart turned his ankle is the important thing, and really the important thing was after the game, watching him in the locker room, and I was wondering what they were going to do. There's no kind of wrap, no ace bandage, no air cast, no type of thing that you might normally see on a guy who sprained his ankle. He was walking fine, no crutches. And the way he waved over the trainers to kind of help him off and the way he was kind of helped off, it was a little scary. But here's Marcus Smart after the game talking about his ankle injury.
So how's the ankle?
Yeah, what's up? The ankle's okay. It wasn't a lot of swelling. It was minimal swelling for it. I'm able to walk. I'm able to still shift and plan and move side to side, so that's good. Irritated the exact same ankle that I was just coming back from, and in the exact same spot. But everything's okay. I should be fine to play the rest of this road trip. I turf toed it. Like my toes just got caught in the floor, and everything else just went with it.
You didn't feel any on the back of the ankle at all?
No, literally right on the right on the bone and on the ligament of it. But like I said, it's just irritated from the last ankle injury I had, but I'm okay.
Cool. The game tomorrow, would you still be playing, or is it just another day?
Yes, if there's a game tomorrow, I definitely would have played, for sure. But we'd rather be safe than sorry. And because, you know, it's so early on in the season, we don't want to risk anything. So got a day off, use it, get the treatment I need, and be ready for the next game.
Did you think about
if this had been a tight game, would you have thought about trying to run your race?
I probably would have came back out there if it was a tight game, but, you know, 6 years in, body ain't like it used to be.
Yeah, you're a little banged up with the hip as well as the fingers. You just continue to play right through everything.
Yeah, it's in my DNA, and that's all I know. You know, if I'm able to get out there, no matter how hurt I am, if I can still produce and help my team, I'm going to try to do it. And that's just how I was raised. And, you know, my teammates respect it. You know, they understand, you know, obviously me not coming back, but, you know, they handle it. We got a bunch of great guys that can step up and take over games. And they did a good job tonight. I'm proud of those guys.
You wonder if the Celtics are going to have to step in and save him from himself. He's always going to want to play. And the trainers have a say in this. And if they think that he's not 100%, then they can say, like, look, you need to take a game off and just chill. I don't know what the situation is with exactly how he feels with all the other things. He clearly is banged up. Everybody knows he's banged up. He clearly wants to play. He just said it. It's in his DNA. He wants to play. I wonder if the Celtics were playing Cleveland on Wednesday, if Marcus would be as adamant about playing the Clippers. You're going to need somebody to switch onto Kawhi Leonard. You're going to need somebody to switch onto Paul George. You're going to need somebody to direct that traffic, that defensive traffic. Maybe he just wants to be a part of that. And he doesn't want the Celtics to, I don't want to say punt a game because he's not playing, but he has replaced Al Horford as the most indispensable player on this roster. Because you think about it, all of these other guys, like, there are bigs. They can make do. If they have to start Robert Williams, they could start Robert Williams, and you lose something, obviously, and he hasn't been playing all that great, but you can make do with Robert Williams and Enes Kanter and Grant Williams, and maybe you recall Taco Fall or something. If another wing goes down, it's going to be extraordinarily tough anyway, because the Celtics don't have guys who can do all of the things that all of those wings do. But you still have, like, if one of those guys goes down, you still have a Kemba or, like, whatever, some combination of Kemba, Jalen, and Jason to kind of get you through. Again, not great, but there's something there. You lose Marcus Smart. Who has anything close to what Marcus Smart does? Who does anything that Marcus Smart does? The level of knowledge, the ability to shoot now. There are guys who are better shooters, but you throw him out there as a guy who will take and make three-pointers. He took 10 three-pointers. Now, he made three. If he makes one more, he's shooting 40% from three. That's awesome. 30% from three, you know. But that's the difference between one make. And there were definitely a couple that could have fallen. But still, look, he scored 17 points while playing the defense that he played, while directing and calling things out. He's indispensable for the Boston Celtics. So I just hope that they're careful. And the number one thing, and this kind of is at the heart of the load management debate for me, if they can rest the guy for a game, if that preserves him, or even two in Marcus Smart's case, I don't know, whatever it takes to heal this thing up, if they can rest him and it prevents a longer term thing down the road, then do it. Like, there's no point in killing yourself for these games in November if it's going to make you less effective in a stretch run or a playoff run that the Celtics are going to want to make. So I would just hope that if he plays, it's not that he's kind of insisting his way onto the floor, and we'll see. But the good news is the ankle seems fine. But we all know ankle injuries, they can swell up the next day. So it's something to keep an eye on for the rest of the day Tuesday and Wednesday morning. We'll see the Celtics have a shoot around in LA, and we'll hopefully find out more then. But for now, Marcus Smart was walking. He was walking gingerly, but under his own power and without any sort of necessary wrap or brace on that thing, on that ankle. When I return, shout out to some of the other guys who did work in this game and who have been doing work, including Brad Wanamaker, and that thing that I noticed about the refs. I'll talk to you about that next on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
I'm going to bet that Brad Stevens probably, in an honest moment, likes Brad Wanamaker the most on the Boston Celtics. Like, if you had to pick a favorite kid, like, no parent's going to pick a favorite kid, but if you had to pick a favorite kid, you'd know which one it would be. You know. Don't tell me no. You know. And if your kids are in the car, you can just tell me I don't know because I don't have kids. But you know. And Brad's favorite would be Brad Wanamaker. He calls him a pro at every chance he gets. Like, that guy's a pro. And I'll tell you, in the past few games, after the Gordon Hayward injury, Wanamaker's really stepped up. I think that he definitely deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. A lot of people like to crap all over Wanamaker, and he has some stretches where, okay, he's not the best player on the floor. No one expects him to be the best player on the floor. They expect him to be a solid player, and they expect him to play mostly mistake-free basketball. And that's what he did in this game. 29.5 minutes, 4 of 9 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3, some big shots, timely shots. He had 6 assists to lead the Celtics, 3 steals. Just a really impressive game. 1 turnover. That's exactly what you want out of a guy like Wanamaker. And he never gets a lot of attention, and he should. We should also mention that Semi Ojeleye, who has been a favorite target, a lot of people will suggest that if the Celtics go after, insert name here, at the buyout or deadline or whatever, they need to cut somebody. Well, time to cut Semi Ojeleye. And I get it. I get it. And he's been mostly ineffective to start the season up until the last couple of games. He was big. The Celtics do not have a chance against the Sacramento Kings if Ojeleye doesn't come in and have the impact that he had off the bench. What did he score? 11 points in that game? He came in this one, and he hit another 3, the only 3 that he took. That's what the Celtics need him to do. He played 17 minutes and played almost even basketball, and that's what the Celtics need him to do. To give him minutes like that. His future in the NBA really feels like 3-and-D kind of wing. And now the three-pointers are starting to fall a little bit. Hopefully for him, hopefully for the Celtics, they can continue to fall. And now the Celtics have another option out there for a guy like him who can switch multiple positions and go out and hit a 3 or so a game. And, of course, Grant Williams, who I already talked about earlier, who had those big blocks coming off the DNP. First DNP of his life, and then he comes in and does this game and has this kind of game. So, I'm impressed. I'm impressed by that. That's about it for the game. Other than I want to talk about my view of the game, which I've never, ever had before. I was sitting courtside at the scorer's table. It was basically Mike Scal, a producer type from the from NBC Sports Boston, I believe, Abby, and me. Like, that was the back row. And then other people to either side of us. But Brad Stevens was standing directly in front of me basically the whole game. And it's such a unique view. I've had seats that are close when I was going to games as a fan, but I've never been that close to hear Brad Stevens talking to players. I mean, there was that end of half situation where Brad called in Kemba Walker with 30 seconds to go, and you hear him kind of lean over and call a play and like, do this, do this, do this, and send him in. And then he calls the play, and he knows that he just wants certain things. And then he adjustments on the fly. One situation where it was an end of, I forget exactly where it happened, but it was late in the game, fourth quarter maybe, and the Suns had the ball, and Brad Stevens and Jay Larinaga were calling things out. And Jay Larinaga was saying, like, get ready for the dribble handoff. It's going to be a dribble handoff. And they knew it was going to be a dribble handoff, and it was. And while the play was going on, Brad Stevens yells out, Marcus, it's coming to you, it's coming to you. Two passes later, it's going to, I mean, Marcus was covering Devin Booker, so it's kind of an easy call, but like he knew that's what was happening. And just to hear those guys calling things out and the things that they say and the way that they approach the game. And the one real thing early on and throughout the game that stood out to me was how much crap the officials get. And no one I know cares to hear the officials like sob story or whatever, but you sit there, and if you could just sit there and watch and hear all of the conversations that are being had, it's so the first one was the a continuation call. Jaylen Brown got fouled and he made the basket, but it wasn't a continuation. But he got free throws, and it was very confusing. And Stevens was like, well, wait a minute. If you're going to give him free throws, then you should give him the basket. And what the explanation was the foul caused a travel, and the shot came after the travel. So if you can't allow the shot, because it's an illegal continuation. Like, just because you got fouled doesn't mean you can take five steps and throw the ball in. And Jaylen traveled the bump. He was going up for the shot, but in between gathering for the shot and putting the ball like up, he traveled. And so that is what led it to being two shots. And to hear that explanation happening was very interesting. And, you know, Brad is emotional in that moment. And, you know, he's the preacher of not too high, not too low. But in that moment, the emotions are getting high. There was another moment of where Enes Kanter traveled, like I mentioned before. And the referee said, she was explaining to Brad, like, this is what I saw. I saw what looked like he caught the ball. And she was a little bit behind the play, and it looked like he caught the ball and tried to pass it ahead. He didn't. I think she missed the call. But she was there, very calm, and talking to Brad about this is what I saw. He didn't like that explanation either. The other thing is the coaches never buy the explanations, it seems. But and there was another play where it was an offensive foul on Grant Williams, and Brad didn't like that call either. And he especially, I mean, he was pissed off. And the reactions each time, honestly, from the officials was very calm, very like, okay, this, but look, Brad, this is it. You can't do this thing. And that's what he did. And Brad gets mad, and the players get mad, and everybody gets pissed off. Kemba Walker on the floor screaming for a foul. And the official saying, like, Kemba, it wasn't a foul. I didn't see a foul. And everybody walks away shaking their head. Everybody walks away mad. But whether you think the officials made a good call or not, like, I didn't get a sense of a poorly officiated game. There are a couple of missed calls, but from where I was sitting, I wasn't getting a sense of a poorly officiated game. But even if you think it was, just the way these guys handle themselves and try to maintain some level of order and how much they really hear from players and how much they just calmly be like, nope, all right, let people kind of figure their stuff out and move on to the next play. So that was just an interesting thing, just sitting there. I'd never sat there before, and it's something that stood out. I have a luxury that you don't. And that luxury is that I get to go to a game and focus on something like that for a while, because I didn't pay $200 and didn't go with family or friends or a date or whomever. I'm not, getting two huge beers every quarter. I'm sitting there and watching. I can focus on these things, because you're going to a game. You're focusing on the game. You want to have that emotional release. You want to yell at the refs. Like, that's totally cool. That's fine. So I have the luxury of I'm not wasting money by paying attention to stuff like this. But if you do have an opportunity and you can kind of just take a step back, just watch that. Just watch that for a second if you can. It's super interesting to me. It's one of those little things. The officials are the constant in every game. There's always three officials, and they do play a huge role in the games. And whatever your opinion is of the job that they do, they play a huge role. And to see this was interesting. Anyway, that's the show. I'm going to stop talking now because I'm going to try to get some sleep on this long road trip, because tomorrow it's a flight to Los Angeles and then Celtics Clippers, and then we fly to Denver, and then we finally get to go home. It's a long, tough road trip, and it's tough for all of us, but we do it because we love it. And I do this because I love doing this show, and I love talking basketball with all of you through Twitter. So follow me on Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. I always like having those conversations. I try to respond to as many people as I can. I'm sorry if I don't. It's not intentional. Subscribe to the show. If you're a new listener, wherever podcasts exist, go ahead and give us a subscription. 5-star rating, a good written review would always help. And share the podcast. Tell everybody. Listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.